I'm in a really smoky room.
Oh.
Right now.
Oh. Do you need help? Are you trapped?
Yeah. I'm trapped! No, I am right next to an open window, in fact, but I was feeling a good charcoal disc situation, and so I've just kind of been carrying this lit disc with me.
In your bare hands?
Through various rooms that I am in. No, I have it. It's actually double-decked. I've got it in a burning dish, and then that burning dish is on Avon's ashtray. So.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
Yeah. 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 It's smoking away, though. It's nice. My eyes only burn a little bit.
Hey, that's great. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's usually worse.
I have been up since yesterday.
Yeah, I was wondering that when we were messaging this morning and knowing when we needed to record today. I was like, I bet she didn't sleep.
I had a big old fat anxiety, no sleep moment.
Nice.
It just wouldn't happen. And I kept looking at the clock and it was getting closer and closer to day. And I remember speaking to my therapist who was like, listen, here's what you do. You just sort of wait until you're doing it one time and you feel like, okay, I don't know if this is going to make sense, but maybe people out there who do this, maybe you'll feel me, right? So sometimes you look at the clock and it's almost 6 a.m. and you're like, I'm ready to pass out and pass away. Sometimes you look at the clock and it's almost 6 a.m. and you're like, yeah, I could keep rocking. So she was like, wait for one of those times where you're just not, you know, and just push through. Just stay up and reset. So I'm trying to do that.
Yeah.
I am trying
get back on a schedule
to do that so hard. We have reached the point of like, all right, I'd like to go. This is not fun anymore. I'd like to go to sleep. But it's also that fun time where you start having little tiny mini hallucinations.
Yeah, I know the ones you're talking about. Because usually if I don't sleep at night, if I pull an all-nighter, I can't sleep. I am incapable of sleeping in the daytime. The only time I've been able to sleep in the day lately is after last week. Dude, after you and I recorded Virgin River Simp Cap, I fucking collapsed.
Yes.
I died for 2 hours, dude.
You told me.
That's what that's doing to me. That's how drained I am.
And you know what, dude? Listen, I was thinking, and you don't have to agree with me here. I understand it. I'm not trying to turn the tides, but for all the SHI that we're given, Virgin River, and for how every single episode of Simp Cap has opened up with us being like, God damn it, I've just had a great time recording this season with you.
Oh, no, getting to talk about it at length is cathartic as hell. Don't get me wrong. It's greatness. Because if I didn't, I would just keep it bottled up inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do that.
No.
Get it out.
It's important that we talk about our traumas.
Yes, exactly.
Speaking of talking, what are we talking about today?
Or not talking?
We could talk or not talk for hours.
Still find things to not talk about.
It was a shit box.
I'm talking about petrified wood today.
Ooh, hell yeah. I do love some pet wood. Ew, wait.
I wanted to know about it because I didn't really understand it. So,
okay.
Here we are.
Yeah. I'm excited for you to tell me how it happens. I am talking to you today about Friday the 13th.
Cool.
I tried to sound cool when I said that, but then at the very end of me saying 13th, I kind of did that thing where my tongue hit just the right area and did a little fart noise, so it wasn't cool.
It wasn't
Friday
cool,
the 13th.
So we're talking, have we not talked about this? Whatever. I am excited about it because if we did, I don't remember it. And so we're talking history today. Lore. What are we getting into?
We have some history. We have some lore. I was like, what? There's got to be some cool things to do magically on Friday the 13th. I wonder what the deal is. And I just, it turned out to be one of those topics that is like more history than magical connection. But the history is pretty cool. And also it just shows how we can snowball up and get scared of things all on our own. Oh. You know, we don't need...
We are literally the best on the planet.
Oh, yeah. We just get scared for no reason. And so that's what that is. And welcome to Wubba, the podcast about witchcraft. My name is Charlie.
Formal.
And I'm hiding in your bidet. And that's my cousin Macy. Oh.
Hi, my name is Macy, and I only want you hiding in my bidet if you're warm.
Ugh, no. You're one of, no. I know we've had this conversation. I know we've done it.
Yeah, I know. We stand on opposite camps here, and we're never going to agree, no. And you know what? That's okay.
No. And you know what? Okay. Perhaps if I should use a warm bidet. Like,
that's your prerogative, buddy.
You know, like, refresh my memory as to exactly how it feels. And then I can tell you if I still feel the way I feel. And I will. It will feel like someone peeing directly into my butt.
I'm sure we're going to wind up exactly in the same place, yep. But that does not mean that I discourage your experiment.
Great. I do love a bidet.
Yeah. Tell me all about it.
Listen. You know who else loves a bidet? I'm assuming because our patrons are highly hygienic people, gleaming, glistening. Anyway, it's the Patreon shout out segment. Today, this episode goes to you, Molly M.
I've always loved the name Molly. I think it's a nice name. Oh, you know what it makes me think
Polly
of?
Polly Pocket.
Well, it makes me think of Molly, pretty Molly, won't you come along with me? Molly, pretty Molly, won't you go along with me? Like the old like mountain song, or I don't remember who did it originally, but it's Polly instead of Molly.
It make that, and then in turn, in hand, you singing that made me think of the siren scene in Oh Brother Where Art Thou, where they're singing that song about like what is it?
Oh yeah.
Some little baby.
Yeah. Go to sleep. Little baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's such a good scene.
Yeah. Get all loved up.
Yeah. You and me and the devil makes three.
And then,
is it devil or it's not daddy, is it? You and listen, me and your daddy, I bet it's devil.
I sure absolutely wish it was you and me and your daddy makes three.
Because that's concerning.
Because listen, that is my new, that's my new way to say your mom to people. Yeah.
Fucking oh, yeah, buddy. Your daddy.
You, me, and your daddy makes three.
I mean, it's like that's sounding a lot like the front page of Pornhub at that point.
Like, stepdaddy, thank you. anyway, you're on first.
All right, petrified wood. What is it? Well, it's not wood. At least not anymore.
Stop.
So that was always my question. I was like, is it still wood? How is it hard?
It has become something else, right? It has become better and stronger.
Yes. Ugh. So petrified wood is a fossil.
Whoa.
And it is wood that has since turned to stone over a very long time under certain conditions, which we will get to. And
you mean it's not just really scared wood?
It's not just really scared. Wood. I know when I was like a kid, I always thought that name was so funny. Petrified. I was like, that's the name that we're going for. Petrified.
Do y'all know what this means?
Yeah, like I like petrified because it seems awfully chill. And you know what? It is. Uh-huh. But we'll get to that. But a big chunk of petrified wood that you'll find is oftentimes it's silicate based. So you're going to find a lot of silicate based petrified wood, which happens through a process called silification. Okay. And that means a lot of your petrified wood, you know what it is? Quartz. Largely.
Whoa.
A lot of it. Yeah, because it's a silicate-based crystalline structure. But that's not exclusive, because you got all kinds of other little tasties that'll wash up in them cracks that can really, they can, where you get, you know how you see some petrified wood specimens that are like colorful as all hell and are all, like have a bunch of crazy colors going on and look super cool? You got all kinds of different stuff going on, similar to how we talk about gemstones and crystals that are different colors due to different inclusions of various things. We got that with this. So pinks and oranges. Pinks and orange, like kind of splashes of color, that comes from manganese. Ooh. If any manganese washed up in there.
I'm Aaron
and hung out with that silicate. Purple and blue coloration can come from manganese dioxide, as well as shades of green and blue hues in petrified wood from iron, copper, cobalt, or chromium. So, again, very similar. And I want to say it was chromium that made emerald green. When I should remember that. It's our, see, it just slips right out.
It just falls gone. Right out of the head. I'm not sure I've ever seen this colorful petrified wood that you're talking. I'm looking.
Dude,
I'm
look it up. It's pretty. Google. Colorful. It's super gorgeous. And how does this happen? How do you get petrified wood? Well, there's kind of some variations, but the short and simple of it is that you've got a log or a fallen tree, a piece of wood that gets buried very quickly, pretty much instantaneously. Oftentimes, common culprit is volcanic ash.
Yeah. Like Pompeii.
Yes, yes, except, you know what, I bet there, that would be some interesting wood, be like, this is from structures from Pompeii, but it's petrified wood. But it's not old enough.
I feel like that'd be,
to do that. It takes a long, long time. I mean, it's like, we're talking a long time for this shit to happen. And this is something I don't feel like I've ever retained before, but it makes a ton of sense when it comes to how often we talk about crystals and volcanic ash being involved. Volcanic ash apparently is very commonly high in concentrations of silicate.
Hmm.
So basically, this ash erupts. It's full of silicate, buries everything.
Sick.
And basically, it's just an add-your-own-water crystal creation kit.
Cute.
Time, of course. But you see, so all right, you got this log that gets buried, right? We got our hypothetical tree that was just mowed down.
Yeah. Our Pompeii tree.
By a volcanic landslide. Yeah, buried immediately, sealed up. And that's why this is important. When it happens very quickly, it kind of seals it up in the earth and then the ash so that there's no oxygen that is able to get to it, which helps in the decaying putrefaction process of the tree. And so therefore, decay is kind of stalled. And now what happens from there is that you have groundwater that trickles down, carrying all of that silicate ash and other things, you know, again, like the chromium and all of that washes down, trickles through this structure, this tree structure that has been rapidly buried. And over time, the organic wood matter is slowly replaced, even to the point in some specimens where you can still kind of like see the structure, like the cellular structure of the tree, even though it's not wood anymore. But like the rings and everything is all still there. It's apparent, but it just like steadily took its place and copied it in a crystalline way. And it becomes eventually this mineral mixture that takes its place.
Crystalline. For half a second, my brain goes, Caseline.
Kesavine. My brain always goes to crystalline instead of glycerine, but it should be glycerine, but we've had this discussion. Anyway, so, and that is what makes petrified wood different from a lot of fossil varieties that we see, because a lot of fossils of like animals are, were basically to where like a mold or an imprintation was created, and then that filled up with like the material that became the fossil later on. And that doesn't seem to be the case always, but commonly it is like, it's like this mold kind of, that's created. I have the more like actual name for that a little bit later on. So, that's, again, that's just the difference where you get a lot of detail in the fossilized specimen of these old trees. And granted, you don't always see a clear preservation. Like every bit of petrified wood you find isn't like to where it looks like a photograph from time. You know, that's not always the case. And sometimes, again, like I mentioned, you get some with some like wacky, crazy colors and it doesn't even look like wood hardly anymore. And this can also occur from what is, okay, here's the name, cast and mold process, which is kind of to where basically, so you got the big log, right? And it didn't have as slow of the trickle down steady like preservation on the inside, and more it rotted out a bit quicker and the space filled up, and you still see the texture of the outside of the tree because that was making an indent, but everything else inside just becomes filling of whatever washed in and took its place, more like a lot of animal bone fossils that you might find. And one thing you want to be sure of, and I wanted to include this, and this is really the case for any kind of rock hounding that you are planning to do, make sure you have the permission to collect it. There's a lot of places that do not allow the picking up of petrified wood.
Oh,
now if it's your private property, generally that's different. But like a lot of natural parks, or national parks and things like that, public land, often in cases they want it to be left where it is. Along and not, and that's the case for many things as well, not just petrified wood. But I saw it often for petrified wood. And petrified wood is hard. It's a 7 on that Mohs hardness scale. So it could be turned into all sorts of things. One, you got a lot of tumbled stones. You get a lot of tumbled stones going on with petrified wood. And some fancy specimens being used in, is it lapidary? Is that how you, I always, my brain wants to make it more complicated. But you know, when you're making, like when you're cutting gemstone type stuff, you know, like complex jewelry stone cutting. You can use it. You can do that. However, only a smaller amount are able to do that because you generally don't need it to have any cracks or any voids or anything like that. So you need a really good, solid, like pretty good specimen to cut it in that way. But it can be turned into all sorts of shit, and since it's strong, it can be made into a ring and all kinds of other stuff. Like it can take some bumping around, you know, which I need because I am so hard on everything. And apparently though, so a lot of it to me looks like jasper, like. And it makes me wonder if there's a lot of stuff that I've seen that I thought was jasper, but it wasn't, and it was petrified wood, especially the ones that don't quite look like wood as much, but are just like a whole bunch of cool, colorful shit all inside of it.
Yeah.
But it's neat. Like, I did not realize that, to where you can see some of them, and it's almost like this creamy texture all the way through. But I do want to talk about something that's called peanut wood. So
I'm sorry. Did you say peanut wood?
Peanut wood.
Great.
Yeah, peanut wood. It is a variety of petrified wood, but it has the name because of its very unique looking patterning that it has. So it's called peanut wood because it has like these lighter, more blonder or white inclusions in the pattern of the wood that are of the specimen that looks like peanuts. But apparently this forms because a clam a long time ago carved holes into the wood that then later filled up. And you see this contrast. At least that's how I understand it. And you get that little peanut pattern. Peanut. Hence peanut wood. It's cute. Petrified wood is found all over the world. Got a whole list of countries. We got Argentina, Australia, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, China, the Czech Republic, Germany, Ecuador, Egypt, Greece, India, Indonesia, Italy, Libya, Madagascar, New Zealand, United States, and Ukraine. And the UK. So it's all over the place. And the petrified wood that we are finding is very old, like real old, super old. How old? I don't actually know, because there's a big wide variation of window that I am not confident in. Like a big range that we're talking about. Because I saw several sources that said that the older specimens are probably at most 375 million years old.
Whoa.
Old as fuck, still. Hugely old, like big time old, right? Because that's around the date of some of the earliest old trees. But I also saw 500 million years ago, and I think that's a difference of 125 million years. And I think that's really
far apart.
Don't
think about it.
But whatever. But either way, it's really old, because a lot of specimens are no newer than 15 to 30 million years old. So we're talking like 500 to 15 million years old, if we're going with the full range there. Old.
I had a chunk once, and I, for whatever reason, lost it or don't have it anymore, and I never appreciated how old that sumbitch was. And now I feel bad.
It's still out there being old.
It is. I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't stop existing because I'm not looking at it.
No, that's just a lack of object permanence, which I understand.
No, I like to think of it as Schrodinger's petrified wood.
It's just blip, gone. Yeah. And I love old shit like
yes.
this. I think it is wild. A lot of these pieces of petrified wood are older than a lot of dinosaur bones. Like, that's older than hell. And so when you're holding it, like, you're holding something that our brain has a hard time even wrapping around the scope of. You know, like, the span of time that long, 375 million years. Like, that is so vast. And I wanted to end anyway the pragmatic part of this section before we get into the metaphysical, is that I found this absolutely incredible piece of advice from an article on gemstones.com. And
yay,
this is instructions for how to identify petrified wood. And I just have the first step here because an alien absolutely wrote this.
Okay. I will
not be convinced.
I am ready.
How to identify petrified wood. 1, use the human eye to observe a wood specimen.
Yeah.
There it is. That's how you do it. That's how you identify it.
Jesus.
There were more steps, but I was like, honestly, what more do you need other than use the human eye to identify or observe a wood specimen?
I also like how that's like outside of the weird absolutely Aquarian way that was phrased. Mm-hmm. I love that's the writer just being like, fucking look at it.
Look at it. Does it look like it?
Then it All probably right. is.
It might be. So anyway, let's get into the metaphys here. So the beauty of fossils, and we talked about this a good bit on the ammonite episode. I don't know if that was this year or last year, but that was a fossil as well. The cute little shell looking swirlies. And it was a similar vein with that as with this. And it's that you're connecting kind of through space and time to something that was once alive at one point. The preserved framework of what you're holding in your hand was once rooted into a prehistoric earth, tapped into an ancient mycelium from millions and millions and millions of years ago. And underneath the canopy of those same leaves roamed prehistoric creatures. Dinosaurs might have eaten from the leaves of the wood that you are holding that is no longer wood, but still, that essence is there. And That's just wild. But throughout all of those millions and millions of years, the Earth, and therefore this fossil, have remained. They're still here, which is interesting. It's wild. And it changed and then surfaced. It kind of worked its way back up to breathe fresh air again of an entirely different world from the last time it was topside. And that's very grounding to think about, at least to me. And we've talked about this a lot. Great spans of time are wonderful for me to think on. You know, yeah. Like that so much, like these great spans of time have occurred, and how infinitesimal my little blip of an existence is within the grand scheme of the cosmos. Like, this piece of petrified wood is a reminder that we are a part of the Earth, we're a part of nature, and throughout oceans of time, life has remained still. It keeps going. And we can connect to that reminder when we come in contact with something that is truly ancient and was in the same world as prehistoric things and as prehistoric itself. And petrified wood also goes through a metamorphosis. Its form and composition are completely changed from start to finish, from when it becomes wood to a fossil. No longer is it organic wood material, but instead it's a crystalline structure replaced with minerals still of this earth, but no longer is it the living thing, you know, the corpse essentially that it once was. However, regardless of being completely changed, it's still here. It didn't fade away. It endured. And change, as we talked about in the Toad episode and other things with metamorphosis,
the toad
change
episode.
Is scary. And
you remember their little butts?
The Toad. I remember the little butts.
Aww.
And, you know, transformation can be downright completely fucking terrifying. And what's important to remember is that with every end, there's a beginning, and the transformation might actually preserve us instead of destroy us, like we might think. And petrified wood can be a good place, or a good piece maybe to have on you on days if you're feeling like your emotions are just really trying to latch on every little thing and make it personal or hurtful or scary. Mm. You know, like the day you're just raw. You wake up raw and you don't know why, but you just are.
Yeah.
And we have those days that happen, and maybe your petrified wood piece is kind of there for you. You can shove it in your tits and go about your day and you just have it with you. You know, I can't do that, but I know some of y'all can, and or put it in your pockets, whatever. But take, maybe that's what you kind of carry with you that day, is your petrified wood piece. And to have that kind of grand scheme of things perspective, because that's really what we're working with here. This is the macro scale versus the micro scale. And it can maybe help to pull us out of our ego and help us see the bigger picture, and whether or not how we're feeling, you know, and what we think is really as impactful or serious as it feels when we're so kind of buried in our own perspective that we don't want to or can't see anything else at that time. And
but I love my ego.
I know, this is ego. I know it's an easy vein to fall in, even though your ego just repeatedly just punches you in the face every day.
It's a bad, I'm in a awful relationship with my own ego.
I think we all are.
Oh, yeah.
And in a similar vein, this can be a really good stone to work with for meditation, especially if you find that you get in your own way a lot when you try to meditate. Again, we're working with grand scheme of things, stretches of time. We're working with big picture energy. And there's a stillness that can come from millions and millions and millions of years of existence, much of it in complete blackness underground. And even so, we imagine here, let's play a little activity. If we personify this stone, we have a piece of petrified wood, fucking 350 million years old.
Beautiful.
And we decide it's alive. Let's personify
What's
it.
His
we
name?
Pretend it has a consciousness. I I immediately tried to find, this is where I need Lyra, because she'd have a pun for this so fast. Like,
how does she do it?
She would be ready, man. I don't know how she does it, but I grasped and found static on the other end of the line. I got nothing. So we're giving it a personality. So we have this thing that old, 350 million years old in this case, this piece in particular. That long has it been in existence? Like, do you think that it would be thinking about how, like, somebody cut it off on the freeway earlier?
Maybe it's super petty.
Like, what? Like, odds are probably not. Like, unless it's like an Eddie Cullen piece that just refused to mature over the depth of time that it has been in existence. Like, generally, you'd think something that has been alive for millions and hundreds of millions of years, it might be beyond that. It has graduated beyond these pettier concerns, because you're focused on the depth of the universe at this point. It makes me think of, you know, that terrifying story. I think I want to say it was by David Frost, the one that was on several spooky episodes back, the time dilation one. But like, it makes me think of that, to where it's like you live a thousand eternities and you're changed completely from it. And
I think about that story sometimes out of nowhere.
I do too. It's one of the best written things
out of nowhere. Ever.
So good.
It assaults me. And I just go, whoa.
It's so good. I want to just find that author and shake their hand.
But then if you do, but like, you'll absorb their time slowing down disease.
That's how it's like acid. Yeah. That's how that works. Yeah, you just slurp it up.
They
got
to pass it along to somebody else. It's like it follows.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to get free somehow, you know, make it somebody else's problem.
Oh, yeah.
It's your problem.
Except it's shaking their hand and not boinking them.
Yeah. Great. Well, honestly, this is an easier, like, it's honestly too easy. Like, if all you could do is shake somebody's hand, could you just slap them in the face and run away and then it's their problem?
You know, I think it has to be a consensual handshaking.
Did you almost say hand job? I feel like you almost said hand job and you corrected yourself.
But I wish so hard that would have been what left.
It's got to be a consensual hand job.
Ooh, that's
how you pass it along.
Woof, that's harder.
That's a story. Yeah.
Thanks.
But I can dig this serious. I am above these short time span concerns, and I'm more thinking about the great scheme of things, cosmos type shit. And I feel like that's what you're getting here. And it's helpful for meditation when you're trying to kind of go above the snares of our overactive minds and, you know, egos and whatnot. So it's just maybe it'll help with that like looping jingle you've had in your head all day. You know, I don't know. Like, you're trying to meditate and it's just cut toys a better way.
I like your feet around your feet.
Oh, dude, that one is killing me. I just want to get one day without
over
it. And I can't.
Over and over.
Oh, God. And also, as was the case, as I believe, for Ammonite, since this is something that has existed on this earth for the entire duration of all of your ancestors, it's a piece of something that was alive before them, essentially creating a circuit, encapsulating you and it, making a bracket of everything in between. This kind of long encapsulation of an unbroken line that has led to you. It's like your starting point, and within all of that, there's everything that happened before you. And perhaps with that, if you'd like to kind of go into the spirit side of things, perhaps we can use this as an aid in connection, tapping into the world when our ancestors walked it. And this piece of petrified wood was already around, already petrified, also around when they breathed air, our ancestors. And it's just an interesting unifying piece. And it's different from other rocks and things that have been around for so long because this was once alive and rooted into the world. And It's October. It's spooky season. We made it to spooky season.
Yeah.
And the energy's wild this year. It's squirrely. And you can already feel it. And while it might be easy to look over your chunk of petrified wood for your sweet ass fucking like obsidians or whatever it is that you're wanting to call up your ghosts with, don't discount petrified wood now. Because it absolutely belongs in that category and has a direct living connection to the earth. So use it to call up somebody. Maybe it'll work out for you. And I don't know.
Who fucking knows? I don't know. Shit.
You know. And this could be your own previous, like your own previous ghosts, your past lives. If you're in past life you're reaching back through time. Why not carry something with you that has also traveled through great swaths of time? Something that has had a previous life, just like the previous lives you're looking to investigate. So lots of looking back with petrified wood, but also looking forward, which makes sense due to this kind of grand scheme energy that it carries, because past, present, and future all need to exist in order for time to keep going. We have to look to the past and appreciate its importance so we can learn from it. We obviously are existing in the moment, and we must assume there's going to be a future, even if we're not in it, because the future doesn't depend on us. Time is going to march on, and that's nice.
No.
Honestly, it's a beautiful thing. And petrified wood teaches us that maybe we can float on the waves of time instead of drowning in the present, which I get. Trust me. If we remember what has come before, imagine what is to come in the next 200 million years. Perhaps, you know, we can use that to understand the smallness of us. And I use that us with a lowercase u.
Okay.
Not the uppercase us. Because if you subscribe, whatever, to beliefs that a part of us is eternal, then I kind of feel like you can make a correlation here to where the spirit, our spirit, is the petrified wood, while our meat suit and the ego brain that often pilots it are the wood pulp. You know, they're what is temporary, but you have something that is enduring and just steadily gets more and more solid and tempered and changed and just overall made more, I'm not trying to use the word dense, but I guess, you know, there's more substance there. You know, you talk about like young souls versus old souls, you know, there's a richness that comes with time. And I feel that petrified wood is a reminder of permanence as well as impermanence, because we need both in order to grow and transform. And sometimes that growth occurs when the impermanent things aren't clutched so tightly, when we don't have to hang on to the impermanence and fear it as much. And if we do that, maybe it opens the door for the more permanent aspects of us, the spirit, to take the wheel instead. Because that's where we're going to learn some shit, as if we can kind of quiet our, like, you know, noisy brain and practice letting kind of our true self spirit kind of tell us messages and see if we can listen to it. And I feel like this, we can practice our listening with petrified wood. But anyway, that's it. That's the whole thing. That's the topic.
That was abrupt.
That's pizza meal.
That's pizza meal. Dude, I went back and I watched Pizza Meal again recently.
It's fabulous.
I did. And I also went and watched the original two, Rocco and Laser videos. God. I just went on a little deep dive. It was nice.
They're good.
Yeah. Well,
like, if I say so, I mean, granted, it was all Eldritch Kitchen that made them good. But yes. Like, if I say so, the Morocco and Lasers are great.
Listen, I forgot about how hard we laughed in that hotel room with the first one. It was a good time.
I've never forgotten that. And I've actually thought about it recently because I was thinking about it after I had my entire psyche crack in half when we watched the first six episodes of Virgin River together, and I went into hysterics. It was very similar.
Yeah. Yeah. Except different. Like, I feel like there's a sinister undertone with the Virgin River one.
Yeah. Yeah. One was joyous and one was someone completely at the end of their rope.
Oof. All right. I'm gonna talk to you about Friday the 13th.
Cool. I'm ready.
Okay. All right. Listen to me right now. So we have a Friday the 13th coming up very soon in just a few days, actually. And it was so, so, so close to being on the new moon, which would have been tight. But
it would have been tight.
It is, you know, it kisses the knuckles of the new moon. Mm. And it's the last night before the new moon. So there'll be a little sliver left in the sky, and banishing work could be at its height right now. So if you're trying to get in on that, there you go. I also have, and listen, this is going to be terrifying to try to do on my sleepless brain right now, but I found three different words that mean fear of Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Paraskevidcatrophobia.
Great. Or I believe it.
Triskaidekaphobia.
I've heard of triskaidekaphobia. It makes me think of Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium.
It makes me think of the delicious Triscuit crackers. Or
delicious Triscuit cracker in my stomach.
Doesn't put the tool. Or, and my personal favorite, frigatriskaidekaphobia. I don't know.
Okay.
Frigatriskaidekaphobia. Anyway, and technically, the triskaidekaphobia is the fear of the number 13, but it...
See, that's, yeah, I think that's more kind of where it's in line, but they're reaching for it.
It was thrown into several. And what was funny is... I went through so many papers and blog posts, just so much of looking into this. And every single time somebody stuck one of these words in, they A, did it with full fucking dick out confidence, and B, did not mention that there's also other ways to say it. Like, nobody addressed it. So.
I love that dick out confidence.
Yeah, it was just like... Yes. The fear of Friday the 13th is called doobadoobadoo. And then it was just different than everything else. So, listen here. The Friday the 13th feels to me, I always feel like it happens every, like once every 2 years or something. But.
I think it happens a handful of times a year, doesn't it? No, like three times, four times.
At least once. But it can happen up to three times in a single calendar year. And
sweet.
I almost said something so dumb. I was going to say statistically, it's most often Friday the 13th that it happens on.
That is profound.
What I was trying to say is just the way our calendar works and the way numbers and the 7 days of the week. It turns out that the 13th being on a Friday is actually a little higher than any other number being on a Friday, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Nice. Okay. We got the most bang for our buck.
Yeah.
With the Fridays.
Yeah. So Friday the 13th, it's not necessarily seen as bad luck everywhere, because certainly here in the US of A, I'm assuming a lot of other like English speaking countries. However, from what I could tell, in Greece as well as most of the Spanish-speaking countries today, consider Tuesday the 13th to be an unlucky day. So I don't know, man.
Interesting. Okay.
Let's see.
All right.
Another little fun fact that I saw here that really doesn't have anything to do with anything. I just think it's cute. In the Netherlands, driving is actually statistically safer on Friday the 13th.
And oh, I'm like, I like to think everybody's cautious and superstitious. Yes. So they're like over being like super, super careful.
I feel like I want to think that everyone just stays home. And just decide, like, they're not going to do the shopping that day because it's Friday the 13th.
Guys, just, we can't chance it today.
And there have been reports from business owners stating that they have noticed a decrease in the economic activity on Friday the 13th. Again, this...
Maybe people are staying home.
Yeah, exactly. This could be people being more cautious and they're avoiding making big trips or big investments or big decisions on this day. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got to shift and get a little comfy. Hold on. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah. You shift and you do that. Yeah. You settle in.
You know how sometimes you're real comfy and then just out of nowhere, your body's like, nope.
I'm done. Yeah,
I'm done being comfortable. You need to switch up how you're sitting. Okay, let's see. So when it comes to the history of Friday the 13th and the fear surrounding it or the superstition or the nervousness around it, it is really hard to find a exact single origin. It's more a grouping of contributing factors. And I want to go down this list of contributing factors and historical roots that have led us to where we are today. So, one of the more common ones I saw was rooted in Christianity, Christian links, i.e. the Last Supper. So, some believe that the superstition is originally linked to the Last Supper, where there were 13 individuals.
I was fixing to say there were
13.
Yeah.
13.
There, yeah.
And this was believed to be, this was on the night before Christ's crucifixion, a Friday. Okay.
Oh, that, before that Judas bitch.
Oh, but listen, there's more about Judas here. Judas, which I did not know this, the one was it me, Jesus? He betrayed the Jesus. He is often considered to be the last and 13th person to take their seat at the table. So, even now, there is a superstition about having 13 at a table. And some people will invite like one or more less to avoid it, because it is said if there are 13 at a table, someone there will die soon.
Oh, wow. I was expecting you to say someone there would betray someone, but that's a lot more intense.
Oh, no. Somebody's going to get murked.
Someone's going to full on fucking die.
And
shit.
If you're a historian, you might have already heard this. This is the first time I'm actually seeing this. And I'm wondering if there's correlation between this upcoming story and the Last Supper story, because they sound kind of familiar, but we'll see. In North mythology, there is a story of a banquet that took place in Valhalla, in which 12 gods were invited. However, the trickster Loki crashed the party, and making him the 13th guest, and it turned out to be quite... A chaotic night, which Judas was the last one to take a seat, and then Loki was the last one to show up. I don't know. Just sounds kind of sus. Listen here.
But like, for real though, if I can like take Loki though at a dinner party, I will.
Listen, if I could just be a fly on that wall in Valhalla.
Yeah.
I think there's like, flies in Valhalla.
Throw the trickster energy in. Every party needs a little trickster energy. Come on. Otherwise, what is this? Like fucking supper club?
Yeah.
Like, no.
It's we're
gonna do play bridge.
Every party needs a wild card.
Yes.
Listen, there's numerology reasons of why we're freaked out about Friday the 13th. So the number 12 is often considered completeness. It's perfection. Yeah. There's 12 months. There's 12 zodiac signs. There's 12 hours on a clock, right? Okay. The number 13 is seen as irregular. It's bastardization. It ruined it. It ruined the party.
Ew, and, gross.
Ew, 13. And the irregularity of this number contributes to the superstitions. There's also a handful of historical events. And let's see, do I actually go into this later? Or do I talk about this now? Okay, no, I guess I talk about this now. There is a handful of historical events. First, I want to talk about the, and I'm going in order of like oldest to most recent. So we're starting off in 1754 BCE with the Code of Hammurabi, which is one of the one of the earliest written like legal codes, right? Created by this Babylonian king Hammurabi, and it consists of 282 laws. Reportedly, allegedly, there was a 13th law that was omitted, contributing to the belief that 13 is just a bad dude.
Oh, shit.
But then we skip all the way to 1307, and one of the most cited things that has happened on Friday the 13th, sorry, tired brain. This was also in October, so this is like a little anniversary we have of sorts. We have the arrest of the Knights Templar. So King Philip... King Philip IV of France ordered the arrest of the Knights Templar, which led to their persecution. And then we have the Black Friday bushfires. This is in 1939 in Victoria, Australia. There were devastating bushfires going on. And then we have September 13th, 1940, the Buckingham Palace bombing. German bombers hit Buckingham Palace during World War II. Do you remember that game Titanic? You remember the Adventure Out of Time Titanic?
The sea.
She's coming in.
And I do remember that.
In the very beginning, when you start off as the dude who was on the Titanic and he's about to go back in time and see if things could turn out differently, there's this radio story that comes on and it loops through my head sometimes. And it's, London has endured another night of German bombing. Anyway, that's it.
We need to.
Dude, I would love to. I would fucking...
We need to either simp cap that or whenever I get my good internet, we Twitch stream getting through
100%.
That
100%. All right. So next one. Next one. We've got the Air Force flight, Uruguay, 571, the crash in October. Again, October 13th, 1972. And there was a crash in the Andes Mountains that led to this, you know, horrific survival story. In 1950, we have the nor'easter when it's like N-O-R apostrophe Easter.
Oh, yeah. Nor'easter? You got a nor'easter.
Nor'easter? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. In
nor'easter.
Nor'easter. That's a powerful nor'easter. What is that? Struck the northern United States. What is that? What is a nor'easter?
I've always thought that they were like a really big, strong cold front storms. They come in from... I assumed they came in from the northeast and they just beat the shit out of you. Yeah.
In writing this notes, I didn't look it up because my brain just filled in. It was like, yeah, it's a really big tornado.
But I love that. Yeah, this is fun today. This is kind of like a, what is that stupid game show where you can't sleep do tasks?
Yeah.
Is what I feel like you're doing.
Remember
today.
They made them count all those quarters?
Yeah, and you just gotta, like, not fuck up. I would fail. So, dude, if I don't get 7 hours, I gotta start over the next day.
Yeah, I'm really hoping I make it the whole way to try to do this reset, but my body may just go no. But anyway.
Even if you make it to, like, 6 p.m.,
yeah,
that's great. You'll probably sleep most of the night.
Oh, baby. And then, in 1970, we have the Apollo 13 oxygen tank explosion. Where the Apollo 13 mission experienced a critical oxygen tank explosion. Then in 1972, we have a separate plane crash that happened in Uruguay, and it was from the Air Force this time. Then October 13th, great, so another October, in 1989, we have Friday the 13th mini crash. The stock market experienced a mini crash on this date. Hold on, let's see. Yeah, related to concerns about the UAL Corporation. Don't know what that is. I'm not a stocks guy.
I don't know. I've been listening to too much like Old Gods of Appalachia, though. So I'm just like, that sounds sinister. That corporation sounds, they sound,
oh my God, bad. I just looked it up for the first time. Should have done it earlier, but again, I didn't. It is the United Airlines.
Oh, okay.
In 2012, we have the Costa Concordia disaster.
Oh, the Costa Concordia, yeah, or whatever, that cruise ship. Yep. Dude, have you looked at pictures
of that? It's wild. Yeah.
It is terrifying.
It's so scary.
What is that, like thalassophobia, yeah, and submechanophobia or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, yep.
I, both of those, big time over here, got it. And like looking at pictures of it, it just makes my stomach tighten.
It's that smokestack for me. You know, like the cigarette butt looking smokestack. I don't know why. I think it's just, yeah, it's so big.
The scale. It's, yeah, so huge. Yeah. Dude, that's the thing. Like big things like that, like even seeing, and it's cool. Like I like to see the cruise ships at the docks, but like even seeing them kind of like from a distance, like looming over buildings and just like
in Galveston.
Something about it kind of makes my heart. Yes. Yeah. It kind of makes my heart race. Yeah. It's just a little scary.
Just, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely. The megalophobia is but yeah, in a lot of ways not everything does it for me,
yeah,
but sometimes it does, and I think for me it ties in with my I have a almost irrational throw up inducing fear of heights, and I think if I
forget that about,
dude,
you,
dude, it's awful, and for some reason it doesn't even act up that much on airplanes because I'm already so, yeah, scared of the airplane.
It's buried in the other fear.
It's all mixed together. But just even looking up at a big tall building, I feel like I'm going to pass out. And I have passed, really, out because of my fear of heights. So like, damn, don't like it. And I think that's where it comes from. If something's so big that it looks like I could be up at the top of it, it freaks me out. Okay. So those are some spooky things that have all happened on Friday the 13th that have led people to kind of go, ah, fuck, it's Friday the 13th. That's why that happened. All right. Outside of that, there's also cultural influence. So this is where we're getting to the Friday the 13th movies, you know, or...
Ah, oh, I was waiting. Yeah. I've been waiting
for a guy like you. And other forms of literature, movies, pop culture that has... snowballed us up into being afraid of Friday the 13th. And also there's the psychological factors such as cognitive biases. What's the other one where you, confirmation bias and the general conditioning that we've received through those cultural influences. So I have some history of Friday the 13th for you. So, the earliest documented reference that I could find to Friday the 13th being an unlucky day appears in the biography of the composer, I don't know how to say this first name here, Giordano Rossini? Anyway, according to the historical records, Rossini died on a Friday the 13th in 1868, and they also had an intense fear of the number 13. So what a slap in the face. In your biography, you write about, like, not like in Friday the 13th, like, it just, it feels weird, it feels off, I don't like it, I think this day is unlucky, probably resulting from them having the fear of the number 13, and not much, like, I don't know why.
Yeah, they just stressed so much about they died on
the Friday the 13th. It just seems like one of those things that, like, it's like, if that's all I'm remembered for, I'm all right with that. That's weird enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take it.
But more recently, the specific connection between Friday the 13th, superstitions that are like wrapping it up in the same vein as like bad luck. That gained broader popularity in the 20th century. There was a novel titled Friday, the 13th by Thomas.
Oh, beautiful.
By Thomas W. Lawson. And this was in 1907. And the story of this novel revolves around a stockbroker in good old New York City, good old 1907 New York City, who uses the superstition of Friday the 13th to create unease in the stock market on the Friday the 13th. So they could then use this to their own gain and kind of cheat the system or, you know, I don't know, the outcome, make their outcome better. I don't know, stocks.
Okay. Okay. Sure.
But this novel is credited in helping to spread the superstition of Friday the 13th on a much larger scale. All right.
Okay.
So
it's all about money.
Yeah. Friday the 13th. It's actually a stock day. Who knew?
Great.
Does that mean it should be like a bank holiday?
Hey, you know what? It fucking should just be.
Start getting the day off.
Yeah. I'm glad that we made it more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. More reasons. More reasons through history that people have just been a little sussed out of Friday the 13th. We're going to start off with numerology. So there are good things and bad things about the number 13. And let's start off with some positive associations. So first of all, 13 is associated with transformation and is a symbol of change. Numerology. Sorry, guys. I'm extra mush mouth today because I'm very tired. Have I mentioned that I was up for a very long time? Numerologists often see the number 13 as a symbol of change and transformation because it represents the end of one phase and the beginning of another. Again, it is the end of the 12 months of the year. It is the end of the 12 hours of the day, so on and so forth. And this change is generally viewed as positive. That's what it makes me think of as the tarot card, like the wheel or perhaps the tower or even maybe the chariot. Like a little bit of that like change or death, the death card. Change is coming, but it's good. Also, it is linked to spiritual growth, particularly our inner development. Some interpretations of the number 13 have to go with undergoing a period of growth within our spiritual section. And this could involve heightened sense of awareness, especially when it comes to our self-awareness, our introspection, and then also deepening your connection with your spiritual path. Now, let's get to the good shit. Let's get to the negative associations. Here we go. Superstition. Trisket dickophobia, or whatever that word was.
Yep.
The fear of the number 13. It is rooted deeply in Western cultures. It's believed to have contributed to the avoidance of the number of various content. You know, like some buildings skip the number 13, you know, or the floor 13. They go straight to, you know. And I think there a lot of different places have their version of this. 13 is just big for Western culture. I think in Japan it's 4. I think there's like often not a fourth floor. 4 is associated with death. I could be wrong on the number. It's either 4 or 7. I can't really remember. But I'm saying
this is always, even as a kid, this has cracked me up. Because like I remember staying at hotels and being like, look at the elevator. Yeah. There's no, and I remember thinking, no, there is a 13th.
Yeah, it's just called like, something different.
There's a 13th floor. Like, what? Whatever.
And it's one of those little traditions that sticks around that it's a little heartwarming to me to just see.
Yeah. It's very human.
Yeah. Okay. Aquarius.
It is. It's a very human thing. No, like, just being like, well, correct. We just slapped a different thing on it, so it's not real. Yeah.
And to see these real big, corporation-y or at least like big fancy hotels, or just like big names in the hotel game, just all like kind of crumbling to this. It's, I don't know. It's, there's something nice about it to me.
Yeah, it's to see, it's new, it's still out in the open, new age, well, not even new age, it's old school, but like, it's superstition, yeah. But it's superstition that's being heeded, yes. And not being like, oh, that's nonsense. It's like, oh no, we don't have a 13th floor. Fuck that.
That's the thing, is it's so like hush hush. You know what I mean? You won't really even notice it unless you're looking for it sometimes and just be like, oh shit, this one doesn't have the 13. And a lot of,
this is one of those,
I guess newer buildings that you don't see that as much necessarily, but you'll see it in your old school buildings.
Yes.
Now, just how 13 on the positive side of things could represent a good ending of things or change, good positive change, it can also represent challenge and instability. So while some people say, hey, 13 is this nice rounded off, it's ending the 12 hours, the 12 months. No. It's actually coming in to be an outlier, to be the crazy Loki showing up at the table. You know, it's the Judas here. Cool. And it's going to bring chaos and, in people who have been influenced by this number in some way, shape, or form. Maybe they were born on the 13th. Maybe they were the 13th child. Maybe they're 13 Whoa. Feet tall. I don't know. However they're influenced by this, it's thought that they might face some like a bad run of luck in this life and just come across like this chaos and these unexpected obstacles. And uncertainty in general. There are, like I said, cultural variations of the 13. Like 13 is actually lucky in some cultures. I believe it is Chinese numerology where 13 is considered lucky. And the pronunciation of the number in Mandarin sounds like the words for assured growth or vibrant, for what I saw online. And that's just sort of backwards to how we see it. So again, it's not this inherent thing. It's just how we have wrapped ourselves up in it and become afraid of it. Tarot card symbolism. Although I kind of threw out some earlier that I would kind of associate it with, 13 is actually associated with the death card in tarot. It is the 13th card. And we know at this point, when you pull that death card, contrary to like the gasp it gets from the people in the room and in movies, you know, when somebody flips the death card and it's like, oh, shit, it actually is a symbol of transformation, of good change. Or, I mean, shit, maybe even the change will be not good or hard, I would like to say, but the end result is a good, a new, a better. And it can signify the end of one phase, closing of a chapter, and moving on to a new one. Let's see. And back again, ending this little section where we started it with numerology, the number 13 is also sometimes, and I would feel weird if I didn't mention this, because I remember learning this, that sometimes two, like a double, anything over one digit is sometimes a combination of those energies, right? So while 13 could mean something, 1 and 3 can also mean something. 1 represents individuality and new beginnings, and 3 associates creativity and communication. So this could all lead back to that whole thing about like personal growth and positive transformations. So I want to talk about some magical shit right now. So listen here. We can't discount the Friday part. We've talked a lot about the 13th part of Friday the 13th. But what about the Friday, dude? It's Friday. You remember that song?
Getting down on Friday. Yeah, I do remember that. Getting ready for the weekend. Oh, yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
What is
the RB, Rebecca Black. Yeah.
What's the one line about like, I'm going to jump in the car, which seat should I choose? It's... I don't remember. Anyway,
I I remember it just takes me immediately back to the Mac lab at my high school and watching it over and over and with my honestly probably friends being really mean and being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that was the thing, be mean to Rebecca Black, but it was okay because she was rich.
Oh yeah.
Was the
That was the justification. It's like, it's fine. She's fine. She has money. Ruin her life.
Yeah, she'll be okay. A 14-year-old or however can definitely endure this.
Cyberbullying. Oh, the 2010s.
Then again, I don't know. Maybe she went on to be a total dickass. But Friday is associated with the planet Venus. And it's often considered to be dedicated to very feminine divine energies. And I want to roll through a couple of these, okay? First of all, we got Venus from Roman mythology, all right? So Friday is named after the Norse goddess Frigg or Freya. But, you know, we can't look over all these other dudes. We got, again, like I said, Venus, who is the goddess of love, beauty, desire, fertility. We have Frigg and Freya, which I don't know why I mentioned them up front. I was going to come down here. I'm very tired today. Frigg / Freya from Norse mythology. Wife of Odin and a powerful goddess who is associated with love, fertility, love, and the household, the hearth. Also connected to things like wisdom, domestic life, and certain aspects of war and magic. Aphrodite from the Greeks. Let's see.
Aphrodite.
Dude.
Oh, yeah.
I have to tell you. Okay, I have to tell you. Because did I mention I was up very late? Well, it rolled to about, I don't know. It was about 8 or so. And I was like, you know what? If I'm going to do this, I'm going to get me a little treat. So I went, I was like, I'm going to get a fast food breakfast. You know how long it's been?
Wow.
Since I had a fast food breakfast. And I was like, I got all the time in the world. Mm. So I drive up and I'm sitting in the line and I'm waiting for my food. Windows down because it feels fucking great out.
And cruise. Yeah, I know it does.
And they're still, I guess they're still getting their shit together. You know, they're kind of getting, and they crackle the radio on for the first time, you know, and I, you know, you hear it kind of speakers come to life. And what else is blasting except She's So High?
What a reward.
And it was like,
what a reward.
It was a moment that I was like, you know, I'm here. Windows are down. It feels fucking cool. I'm getting a fast food breakfast. Fast brekkie? You kidding me? It was a real slice.
You got Tal Bachman serenading you the whole time.
Tal Bachman. Aphrodite is the goddess of love, beauty, and pleasure. Then we have Ishtar from Mesopotamian mythology, associated with where did I put that? Love, beauty, fertility, war, and that's it. Full stop. I don't know why I said and. Then we have
great.
Then we have oh gosh, please forgive my tired pronunciation. Lakshmi from Hindu mythology. And again,
I think it's Lakshmi.
Lakshmi, thank you.
I could be wrong.
I don't know if I've ever actually said that word out loud, only in my head. So it was a real Hermione Harmony thing, associated with wealth, prosperity, and beauty, which is a nice deviation from what we're seeing. We're actually seeing some like prosperity thrown in there, which is nice. Then we've got ocean, and that is they are associated with nurturing, you know, of or I guess nurture. How would you say that? They are associated with nutrition, nurture. How would you say this? Help me, I'm tired. They're nurturing.
Wait, what?
As well.
Okay.
As well as being associated with love, fertility, and rivers. So, as we see, we've got a lot of divine feminine energy, and we've got a lot of softness, but we also saw like war. thrown in there a couple of times, and some powerful shit like magic, you know. And then there's also a lot to be said about the powerful, you know, aspects of love and of the hearth, like keeping the hearth. So it's like soft. It's that soft, quiet power, I think. You know,
nice.
It's not your Mars bum rushing in with a big boner and sword. You know, it's a little more subdued, I guess. Anyway, so God, I'm so stupid sometimes reading these notes back. I'm just like, Friday is a good day to tap into love.
I know. And I get really into myself when I write, and I have to paraphrase because I'll just be like really feeling my own writing, and dude, it's just ridiculous.
And then it takes up such a chunk that I'm like kind of skimming it, trying to see what I'm going to say here. And I'm like,
yes, I do the same shit every week.
Come shit, you just said all this. Anyway. So Fridays are actually good days to work with all of that stuff we talked about and to cultivate love, beauty, harmony into our lives. But let's deviate back to where we were. Let's talk more about the number 13. Okay, because I want to talk about it in a witchy way. So we've got lunar associations. All right. So 13 is linked to the lunar calendar. There are 13 full moons in a lunar year. And this cycle, as we know, is held to a high degree. You know, if people don't follow it in a, like a sacred way, a lot of witches do appreciate in some way or another the moon cycle, the full moons. Then there's transformation again. That was put in the wrong place. Sorry. The positive significance of the number 13th, again, symbolism of beginning of new cycles and transformation, spiritual transformation. Friday the 13th could be seen as particularly potent for this kind of work. It's also good for embracing change and releasing what no longer serves you. And if we're riding that banishing vibe that's going to be happening on that night, because we are so close, we're at the very end of the waning moon, so close to the new moon. If we're doing some kind of banishing or releasing, this could be a really, really good day to do that. As you know, Friday the 13th could also be about embracing the change that comes with it. And you know, a good old ritual for transformation. And I'm talking like, you've been thinking about the haircut. You've been thinking about that tattoo? You've been thinking about that piercing? You've been thinking about it? You've been thinking about some kind of transformation? You've been thinking about that new job? You've been thinking about moving that house? You've been thinking about, well, you know, other things? I don't know. What else? Getting you a Kia Soul? Do it.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Hell yeah.
So, moving into sort of the present day, there's an auspicious view of Friday the 13th for witches. A lot of witches and just like spooky folk in general are kind of drawn to the Friday the 13th. I have always,
of course, yeah,
I've always loved the Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Freaky Friday.
Me too.
Happens, I think, on Friday the 13th. There's also, you know, all other kind of shit. But Friday the 13th, listen, there's no shame in leaning into this vibe that it has cultivated over these years of it being, ooh, a spooky day. You know, you could go have your cemetery picnic. You could go and do any number of things. And guess what? I have a number of things that you could do. Okay. First off, we're going to talk about some spells that are going to be particularly potent for Friday the 13th. Yes, 3/4 of them are candle spells. Get over it.
Okay.
So the first...
I like a candle spell.
The first one is a protection spell. Light a white candle. Focus on the flame. Envision a protective barrier around yourself or your living space. And repeat a protective chant or affirmation such as, I am surrounded by blank, whatever you want to fill in. Ancestors.
Okay.
I am surrounded by light. I am surrounded by whatever, right? And then, so I am surrounded by obsidian and I am safe. Number two.
Okay.
A good luck spell.
Yeah, I like that. It's to the point. Yeah. It's simple.
Yeah. Two, a good luck spell. Use a green candle to represent luck and prosperity. Write down your goals and desires on a piece of paper, or better yet, a bay leaf. Burn that shit while visualizing your goals manifesting. A cleansing ritual. Take a ritual bath with salt and herbs like lavender, some rosemary, whatever you got hanging out in your kitchen, you know, throw it in there. Make yourself a little... As long as it's skin safe and you like the smell and you're not allergic, you know, be smart. And then visualize this salt being washed off of your body along with your negative energy and just going down the little fucking drain. Banish it.
There it is, gone.
Manifestation spell.
Who needs it?
Who needs it? The devil. Manifestation spell. Make a vision board. Make an old school vision board. Get together with some friends.
Great.
Pop open some libations. Have a Friday the 13th vision board creating time. You know?
That's really sweet.
It's like a spooky little time, you know? So maybe we get together and maybe we're all planning our fall, Halloween, winter, dark half of the year vibes that we want to portray. And, you can keep this up. Keep it up and make your little friendship board. Stick it on the wall. And lastly, where would we be without a good little love spell? Get you a pink or a red candle. And if you're looking and you want to meet, you know that list that you got in your head? That list of you're like, the next time I start dating someone, they got to, here's the fucking qualifiers. Here's the things they got to meet. Take that list. All right. Write it down. Don't be too picky. You know, like we all got to be flexible in love. Okay. But put that candle on top of that list and focus on this love that you want to attract. You're trying to find that person that embodies those characteristics. And I've got some not spells for you, but fun things to do, perhaps on a Friday the 13th, and might be a little bit of witchy fun. Take you a moonlit walk. It's going to be real dark, almost no moon, except for the sliver. We talked about the sliver. You know, bonus points. If you take a little bottle of water, unopened bottle of water with you, and get it to soak up that banishing moon power, make you some moon water on your little walk. Have yourself a witchy movie night, perhaps while you're making your vision board. Put on James and the Giant Peach. Put on...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Put on, I don't know, you can put on Hocus Pocus for all I give a shit. Now,
yeah,
you could put on Friday the 13th, which would be way cool. Try your hand at divination.
Great.
Because we're entering that time. And try something new, because we're about beginning new things on this Friday the 13th. Try perhaps your hand at a pendulum. Or a scrying mirror. Tell ghost stories? How fun are ghost stories?
I love them.
Love.
They're great. Love.
Make a witchy playlist. Start your herb garden, you know, or I guess it's winter, so I don't... If whatever grows in the winter.
Nice.
Mint? Yeah. I don't know.
Shit.
And lastly, I've got one here that I thought was interesting because I popped it down on the list and I was like, I don't know if you'd want this, but then I was like, maybe you do. So the last one I have for you, which is actually, in fact, and I'm just noticing it now, it's the 13th thing that I have of this not spells, but fun things. So that's interesting.
Meant to be.
Crystal charging. Put your crystals in the moonlight to charge them with the energy. And I was like, is like banishing energy like what you're trying to go for when you charge? Like, I don't know if that's like real. But then I was like, yeah, you know what you could fucking use this for? I feel like a lot of your crystals that you don't set out necessarily a whole lot. This could be their time to shine. Because if I'm putting stuff out in the full moon, I'm putting out my rose quartz. I'm putting out, you know, the amethysts. I'm putting out like all the other. But like on a waning moon, put out your obsidian. Put out that smoky quartz. Put out like your darker,
your thick heavies.
Big heavies.
Yeah.
And let them, allow them to sit in that light and banish this shit that they've been soaking up for you for so long. And like, let it go. Let it go. Can't hold me back anymore.
Okay. That sound okay.
I don't remember.
I liked the conviction. Can't hold me back
anymore.
Anymore.
I don't remember how the rest of it goes.
No.
Let it go. Let it go.
Don't slam the door. Mm-hmm. Close your
I can't
mind and
hear
slam the door.
What you're gonna say. Remember.
It's all way too high pitched for me to sing before I never retain.
I have
the
to kind of do my like emo accent.
Yeah.
When I do that song.
Yeah. Idina Menzel has just been there to remind me of how much better she is than me, effortlessly.
Yeah, well, you know, can't hold ourselves to unfair standards, man.
No, I know. Yeah, I mean, it's like, seriously, I was like 11 when I first saw her as Maureen, so like, I didn't even have a chance, you know?
Ah, and that is Friday the 13th. May you do some cool witchy shit. With it.
Do some cool witchy shit. Yeah. I'm excited about it. I want to watch like a little flick, you know, and maybe do like a craft.
I want to put on a movie that's going to scare the shit out of me.
Should.
Yeah.
Should. Yeah. What's it take? I'm curious to know. This is how we can kind of start winding down. What's your style of horror that gets you the most?
Okay, I'm entering a weird phase. I'm entering the, like, should I go further with this phase? Because, like, I have a very high threshold for horror. Because I watch a lot of it. And I read it, and I listen to it, and I just, it's around me. And I have a hard, and okay, just to answer your questions on a basic level, I love any kind of, are we talking about what I enjoy or what scares me?
What scares you the most?
Okay.
Like what truly gets you?
Okay. I would say, and I know that there are polarizing opinions on this, but let's talk about, let's use the Blair Witch Project as an example. So I'm not actually even so sure if I've seen the Blair Witch Project all the way through, just because I'd seen it in so many bits and pieces growing up. I was just sort of like, I get it. Yeah. I don't really need to see it. But any kind of really well done found footage is good to me. I like that air of like, is this real? You know, it's not real because it's like credits roll, but like, and again, polarizing opinions, I know, but like when fucking Paranormal Activity came out, it scared the shit out of me, dude. And
that one's never got me too bad.
And that's the thing, and I understand why it wouldn't. But it was, I do remember watching it as an adult, and then I went home later and I was like, that was so much fun. Because I'm very rarely scared in the moment by it, but then like at night, when everything was dark and I was just sort of peeking out from over, like the covers, and I was just like, oh fuck, what if it's in the next room, you know? And then like Paranormal Activity, when something is going on or when it's about to go on, they did that thing that you could really hear in the theater. They like cranked the bass, but like,
yeah, the rumble.
Yeah. It was like, no, you're not hearing anything.
Yeah.
You like, there's that rumble of the bass. And I would just sit there and I'd be like, tricking myself into thinking that I was hearing that. But it definitely needs to be like psychological or have like an air of truth to it. Like Babadook was scary, you know, to me.
Those are the ones that get me the most, is the more psychological. Yeah. And of course that one had scary visuals, but it was like, those are the ones that stay with me the most, because I can watch something generally pretty gory and be like, sometimes some of them have stayed with me for a little while and they made me feel slimy and gross, but generally I can kind of check it at the door. Mm-hmm. But The Babadook stayed with me for like weeks.
Yeah. 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 I think it's hard to describe exactly what's going to be scary. Because to me, even though The Babadook is scary because of the scary visual, like it was, the thing was scary in itself. And like, obviously the creeping in the room and like there was the psychological, or I'm sorry, the supernatural part of it. There was also the, like, when you kind of put together like what the movie's about, like what it's a metaphor for, you know?
Yeah. The whole underbelly of it all.
Of it all.
Like, oh shit.
Then it's scary in a real way, you know? But slashers don't do it for me. I mean, they can be fun, but I don't get freaked out by them.
The strangers bothered me.
You see, that's what I mean. I feel like there has to be some level of, could this happen? Or at least a suspension of...
Because also, that movie is fucking bleak.
Right.
Like, it is bleak. There's not hardly any positivity in it. It starts with an uncomfortable argument. Like, it is all the way through, just kind of makes you feel a little sick. Or it does me.
Yeah.
The whole way through it.
And what's disappointing to me about The Strangers is that is truly one of those things I wish I could go back and experience for the first time, because subsequent watchings, while still good, like I still like the flick, like it doesn't get you the first time like it got you the first time, you know, because you know what's up.
Oh, dude, the first time was terrible, because especially where we live.
Oh, yeah.
I hated
it. It was awful. It was spooky.
I didn't look in the glare of windows at night. Like, if I needed to get up to go to the kitchen or anything, or if I was by myself and I needed to, like, get up in the middle, I would just look at the floor. Just straight down at the floor, because I knew I was going to see fucking Sackhead
looking
at me.
And in a similar vein, the Hush. Hush got me. I thought Hush was creepy, because, like, that was... I don't know.
Is that the one with the mask?
Yeah. And it's the girl from... she's married to Mike Flanagan. She's in all of the Mike Flanagan stuff.
Yeah. I know the one you're talking
about. I don't
know
her name. Yeah. Theo. Yeah. Yeah.
I think of her as Theo.
That's all. Yeah. That's how I have her in my head. I know. She was in it and she didn't have hearing. And like, so there's this thing that's like toying with her, you know, but she can't hear him coming and, you know, stuff like that.
But, I hate that.
But I am in a weird spot where I'm starting to like interact with, like, I don't know, the horror community, and I'm starting to get the recommendations of like, okay, listen, are you desensitized? Here's a list of movies that are gonna fuck you up, you know. And of course there's the iceberg to it, you know, and then it's like you get way down that iceberg and you're like, I'm not trying to go down there. But just some more ones that are made to truly freak you out, and they're not like super pop, and I'm like, do I want to fuck with this? I don't know, maybe.
You know, you can fuck with it responsibly.
Yeah. We'll see.
I trust you.
We'll see how scared I get at night and start peeking out over my blankets.
Yes, yeah, you start getting really good and paranoid. Yeah, that'll be really great.
Ooh, wow. So what about, I guess, same, you need the, you. It's the psychological.
Well, and I have a particular hatred for situational horror films that involve being stranded or trapped open water for me. Like, I'm not watching those.
Yeah.
I watched them enough because my mom loves that kind of movie. She's like comforted by it. And
your mom.
I'm not. I am deeply unsettled by it.
Your mom loved Open Water, right?
She loved Open Water, dude. Like, loved it. And there's several that she's seen. Like, what's the one where they're caught on the fucking snow lift and there's all the wolves? Like, I can't. It just revs my, I feel like it just revs my anxiety through the roof. Give me the supernatural. Even give me a fucking killer. I don't care, but don't strand me anywhere. Yeah. Like, last night I was by myself because Hunter was in Austin last night for work, and I was just flipping through, because usually when it's just by myself and I have a stag night, I'm like, I'm going to have like a movie night for myself. I always do it. I don't know why. And I was flipping through, and there was one that I think was called Nowhere, and it's about a woman who wakes up in a floating shipping container that's leaking in the middle of the ocean. I was like, fuck that. Like, I'm going to be so upset I'm going to be so upset by this completely. And I just, I was just like, I imagined myself in the situation, was like, no, I'm moving on. Not going there. Not tonight. Not today.
Not today. Not, what do you say? Stars. Can't do it.
The stars. Can't do
not
it.
Not today.
Not today.
Wow. So yeah, I guess hit us up.
Which that's on Netflix, everybody.
The El Dorado?
Just so you know, if you want to take that road to El Dorado.
And you,
you
do.
You can do it.
I might actually put that on here in a bit. Just for some comfort noise.
Oh.
So was he something built by God? Yeah.
Built by the divinity.
That's right.
By God or something like that. I know divinity is in there. I'm pretty sure. Dude. Oh, it's so good.
El Dorado, the magnificent.
So what a power play to be like, all right, let's, all right, Elton, okay, good, good, we got you on the phone. We need you to do the entire soundtrack. Yeah. Like, you know how Phil Collins did Tarzan? We need you to do that, but with this.
Who was it that posted the thing? It was like, okay, Phil, it's just a movie animation Disney of Tarzan, like, you don't have to go too hard. And then it's just a picture,
you don't gotta ruin us all.
It's just a picture of him at the piano and the piano's fucking on fire.
It's gonna make all of these children weep.
Yeah. The other one I like is they were like, okay, listen, it's just the menu music for 007 GoldenEye.
Oh my god,
you don't need to go too hard.
they went
boom,
they went balls deep
boom,
for
boom,
that
boom.
Menu, man.
Yeah.
Oh, it kills. I need that as like a fucking tone,
dude,
in my life somewhere.
I have got to go find that because I want to put that on my list of songs that I just slither across the floor to.
No, yeah, it's a fucking bop. Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah.
All right. That's everybody's homework. Go listen to the pause, the music, menu music, pause sound for 007 GoldenEye N64. Go. Goodbye. Mm-hmm.
When I think of that game, last thing,
oh, yeah,
and I hear it all the time in other things, especially like from the era, like you hear it in X-Files all the time, that deep bell tone is all I think of when I think of 007. That boom!
Oh.
That's like all throughout the game. Mm-hmm. Anytime you're walking, I can't even replicate it with my mouth, but like you hear it all the time when you watch TV from that same era in which that game was made, and it seems like it was the you know how like the, which we have in our Rocco and Laser video, that like it was that then. You hear it all the time. Like, and I think of anytime I hear it, I'm like, that's GoldenEye.
That's pizza meal.
But it was everywhere. Yeah. It was everywhere.
I think of the sound the guns make where they go pew pew.
It's greatness. Yeah. I always think there's a joke in Letterkenny to where he's like, I don't remember what he's talking about. Something is so, he's like, oh, he's talking about that suit. He's like, that suit's so dad that it came home over lunch to play GoldenEye. And I think about that all the time.
Remember when we were cool?
Oh, God. Okay, I'm hot. Okay. I'm sweating.
All right. Later, bros.
Later. Enjoy your Friday the 13th. See, I'll post a bunch of shit in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Love seeing it. All right.
Bye. I'm going now. Tits.